It's showtime.
Cussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob and Kate is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. I gotta tell you, that reverb's a real Lulu, isn't it? I wish I could say we were doing it in hopeless mockery of Rafael Eduardo Cruz the Elder, the man who forgot to become an American for a really long time, but that would be a lie. Somehow or another, possibly involving cats walking across the mix desk. I have reverb on the playback channel, but mercifully not on the... Not on the mic channel and not on the Skype channel, just on anything with a stereo link to it. It's awesome, isn't it? Yeah, I know. No, it's not annoying. It's annoying as hell. That's great until it's time for, whatever. But no, it pretty much screws up everything. Yeah, I know. But I'll sort it out. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live. And that's where you go if you'd like to be part of the chat room, where the Madcap Multimedia Zany Wacky Real-Time Screwball Extravaganza that takes place during the 3 hours in which this program's live. If you jump on in there, well, you'll find me moderating, and you'll find Anatole and Malin and VT Blom waiting to welcome you. Others, as the program proceeds, as folks figure out that I'm not, still... on the road or anything. Thank you very kindly, Brother Deacon Asa, for letting me know that we are running hot and true on both streams. That's always reassuring. So at some point in time, I've got to just restore factory defaults on this entire thing and hope that we get it squared away. It'll be really nice if we do, and then I'll spend hours setting up all the channels all over again because, well, cats or something. Who knows? But it's there. There's nothing I can do about it, and we'll just have to live with it for the time being. Thank you for your patience last night. Had an evening with family from out of town, and, I probably won't see them again for a year or so. And that's why the program was every bit of 30 minutes long last night. But we'll make up for it this evening to one degree or another. It is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn, and we have lots of Titanic intellect to investigate. We have thanks to send out. We thank our subscribers at the beginning of every program. Thank you very kindly to Matt in San Francisco for his participation in the subscription program. If you'd like to be part of the merry band, the not quite 100 of us who keep the program, a quarter of the program going every month, well, run over to headon.live and subscribe either through Patreon or through PayPal. Either one is quite simple. Thank you to Joseph. We have a brand new subscriber. Thank you, Joseph, for subscribing through Patreon. Thank you very kindly indeed. I need to read off the thank yous for the Patreon subscribers at some point very soon, because I try to do that every month as well. Let's see. I think we've taken care of all the house. Yeah, fundraising. We ended the week Friday with a $270 deficit. As I noted last night, that got taken down to $210. And coupled with last night, which albeit was foreshortened, but we still got to raise the same amount of money every month. We're at $610. Now, here's the good news. As I said last night, Liberal Larry, or not Liberal Larry, but Larry in Liberalville, has offered a unique matching opportunity. Larry is going to match $50 a night for several nights running. Nights, evenings, afternoons, depending on where you are. But you several programs in succession. Let's put it that way to be more accurate. So last night, because the program was shortened, there were no takers. So we'll carry that over this evening. There is a $100 challenge on the table, courtesy of Larry in Liberalville. And meeting that challenge would, double your money. Your 5 becomes 10, et cetera. 20 becomes 40. 100 becomes 200. Heck, if somebody jumped in with $200, that would become 400. No, if somebody jumps in with 100, it'll become 200. Don't get ahead of yourself, Bob. But $200 would knock us down to only 410 to go. So hopefully, we will take a bite out of the fundraising hole this evening because, the trip ate up a lot of funds. We raised funds for it, and it consumed them. So that's where we find ourselves. We need to raise $610. Meeting the challenge will knock down 200 of that. Please take advantage of Larry and Liberalville's challenge. When people put challenges forward, they do it because they care to hear this program continue. And we're at a place where we need to do the fundraising to pay the August bills. So head on over to headon.live. Use the PayPal button. For those of you who like to use the United States Postal Service, well, that works too. And there are a couple of folks who like to use Venmo. U.S. Postal Service address, we get our mail over in Beckley. The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEYWV, 25801. And remember, just shoot me an email, bobkincaid@gmail.com, so I can give Bossman Wayne the heads up, and he can take his nail gun with him from the old construction site in case he runs across the Grand Dragon or Wizard or whatever of the clan, because the folks that run that UPS store don't have any compunction against doing business with the clan. I know. But let me know, and I can tell Boss Man Wayne. So hopefully we will take down, it's a tall order to take down $610, but it would be awesome if we could. It would be simply awesome if we could. Now, where do we begin this evening with Titanic Tuesday? Great God Almighty, there's any number of places, but I saw something early today that just sort of made me want to... Bark at the moon. It goes back to a Freedom of Information request that was filed almost a week ago, last Wednesday morning, by an outfit for whom I have tremendous respect. They have been of inestimable help to us here in the struggle against mountaintop removal, trying to find out the shady dealings going on. Between government and the coal industry and whatnot. They've been in court for us on a number of occasions. And I'm talking about Earth Justice. Earth Justice is a fantastic organization. And they are, what's their slogan? Because the Earth needs a good lawyer. The Earth has a good lawyer in Earth Justice. And it's not just the Earth. It's the people who live on it and would like to not be poisoned to death. So last week, Earth Justice filed a Freedom of Information Act request with the federal government. And in particular, they wanted to know about a plan that has been given voice to, you know, well, the Trump regime wants to use Fort Bliss, Texas, and Goodfellow Air Force Base in San Angelo, Texas, as concentration camps for undocumented migrants. Well, here's the problem. And it really does. It sort of makes you go, we're doing what? I mean, to be quite honest, when I first saw the headline in this story, I thought, wait, how high? Are they gonna put a concentration camp on top of a mountaintop removal site? Because the headline, detained immigrants would be kept near or on toxic waste sites. Well, every mountaintop removal site in Appalachia is a toxic waste site. Some of them adjacent to vast seas of toxic waste. Billions upon billions of gallons of toxic waste. But no, it turns out it has to do with Fort Bliss and Goodfellow Air Force Base. That's right. The Trump regime so despises the human beings who desperately try to come to this country to escape the violence in their own countries, which has been, of course, as noted previously, largely fueled by American foreign policy. The Trump regime so thoroughly despises them, they want to incarcerate and concentrate these detainees on top of toxic waste dumps, Superfund sites. No, really, not kidding. This is not hyperbole. This is not stretching the truth. This is a fact. Fort Bliss is listed as a Superfund. The Environmental Protection Agency has listed it. Well, I mean, that was back when the Environmental Protection Agency actually had something resembling integrity. Now it's just an arm of the industry. But a Superfund site poses dangers to human health and the environment. Think about places like, Love Canal. Over at Goodfellow Air Force Base in San Angelo, tents. We're going to house people in tents. We're going to detain people, concentrate people in our camps, concentration camps, in tents that are smack dab on top of a former firing range and not far at all from an uncapped landfill. Just let that sink in for a moment. All right, you little undocumented immigrants, you want to come here? Well, that's all right. We're going to let you live on top of some poison till you get a real nice dose of cancer. Because they're not sending us our finest, we're going to give them cancer. The text of the FOIA request says, these waste sites have the potential to cause dangerous human exposure to toxic chemicals via air, water, and soil to migrants housed in tent encampments and to workers constructing the detention camps. I think we can say concentration camps now, can't we, boys and girls? Yes, we can. Like I said, Earth Justice does fantastic work. And in this case, they're stepping up in support of Alianza Nacional de Campesinas, Green Latinos, the Southwest Environmental Center, and Lisa Evans, who's a lawyer with Earth Justice, said that they're not going to find anything out without the FOIA to the Department of Defense, and that was why they had to do it. Over at SWEC, the Southwest Environmental Center, David Bakke said the public has a right to know what pollutants are in the base and where will innocent children be detained. The surrounding community steadfastly opposes the family detention policy and should not be forced to contribute to suffering by hosting new detention centers in their backyards. So Earth Justice is asking for a 10-day window for a response. I mentioned the program. I mentioned the story on the on this evening's program, because this would be day six. Mm-hmm. But understand that this is not entered into lightly. Earth Justice has experience with Superfund sites. And they know that these places often contain deadly toxins. There's any number of toxic and hazardous substances that are just salted all over Fort Bliss. There's polyfluorinated compounds, PFASs. Fort Bliss water testing in 2017 said various sites on the base had chromium and radiological contaminants. Then there's the firing range. Lead-contaminated soil or lead dust could be a huge danger for young children, and lead, as well as arsenic and mercury, are often found on Superfund sites. Thus, depending on the route of exposure, the substance involved, and the sensitivity of the victim, immigrants on Superfund sites could suffer from anything from asthma to neurological damage to organ damage to cancer. It really depends on the chemical and the extent of the exposure. Hey, I got an idea. Let's ask the folks in Flint. Because, after all, we could afford an initial outlay of $8 billion, that's billion with a B, for space farce, but at the same time, well, Flint still doesn't have clean water. And for that matter, neither do several cities in or communities in West Virginia, and neither does Washington, D.C. Yeah, the warning signs are still posted on the water fountains in the halls of the Capitol office buildings. This is disgusting. This is sickening. This is shameful. My God in heaven. Look at this. It's one thing to show open disdain for undocumented immigrants. Sure. But this is a case, well, this is a case of a piece with our general, with this regime's general attitude toward them. They despise them and they don't care if they kill them. Left to their own devices, the maggots and the Trumpanzees and the Trump regime and the thugs in ICE would probably set up machine gun nests at the border and just mow them down before they could get here. That's what they'd like to do. Because this country is in the grips of a racist, white supremacist, homicidal maniac and his minions and cronies. Building so-called detention facilities on actual United States military bases would be bad enough. I mean, that's kind of the definition of a stalag, isn't it? Concentration camps under the auspices of the military? But to factor in, because this is a horrible country to get sick in, and to factor in the idea of children or adults, it matters little, who will be ingesting poisons that the government know are there. Make no mistake, it's not like the Pentagon's going, oh, really? Well, we had no idea about that. I'll be dipped. I guess we're going to have to find some other. Maybe we can put them in a national park or something like that. Maybe we can build a concentration camp in Yellowstone or something. Who would have thought? Huh? They knew. From the moment this vicious, bloodthirsty, soulless plan was concocted, they knew that they were seeking to put migrant human beings on top of toxic waste. Anybody want to phone in with a, you know, Bob, it's really not fair to compare the Trump regime with Nazis. That's just not fair, Bob. Anybody want to do that? I mean, it's not like they're constructing death camps or anything. Oh, toxic waste, Superfund sites, huh? Never mind. And I commend to you an article in Politico yesterday written by the uncle of Stephen Miller. I tweeted it and Facebooked it. In the article, he gives an account of how his family came to America fleeing the pogroms and the torment of the Tsar's armies and secret police, and later on the Holocaust itself, in which only 7 people out of 2,000 people in the community from which Stephen Miller's relatives escaped made it through the Second World War alive. And he made clear, Stephen Miller's uncle did, that the extended family of Stephen Miller is disgusted with Stephen Miller and recognizes, even if Stephen Miller does not, what these maggots would gladly do to him and their family given an opportunity. Had the policies that Stephen Miller advocates been in place when his ancestors came over, well, Stephen Miller's ancestors, well, there wouldn't be a Stephen Miller, to put it simply. It is becoming harder and harder and harder to avoid direct comparisons between this regime and the murderous regimes of the rise of global fascism. James in Illinois, tongue-in-cheek, says, unfair. It's unfair to the Nazis. They did plenty. Can't blame them for this bunch. Well, you know, I'm not so sure, James. Maybe they were not completely eradicated, and in particular, they were not eradicated here. And when Nazism arose in America in the aftermath of the Second World War, we pretended it was just another fringe political party, you know, like, oh, libertarians or later on Greens. Yeah, free speech here in America, greatest country in the history of the world, yeah, yada, yada, yada. I don't even know if that works anymore. Hold on. Does it work? No, it doesn't work. Okay, hold on here. Check 1, 2, 1, 2. No. Somehow or another, I managed to wipe that out as well. Oh, well. But we under the fetishized view of free speech that we maintain in this country, we pretended that, well, you know, you're just going to have some Nazis here and there. And there really aren't a lot of them, so maybe we'll just let them march around and the ACLU can defend them when they want to march in Skokie, Illinois, through a Jewish neighborhood. And that'll remind people how awful they are. No, it just... I mean, they even got cast in the Blues Brothers movies, for Christ's sakes. And we turned them into comedy routines in things like Hogan's Heroes. Hogan! Werner Klemperer's father was a virulent anti-Nazi, if I recall correctly. Otto von Klemperer. Werner Klemperer playing Colonel Klink. Klink! Mm-hmm. It became a joke. Mel Brooks turned Nazis into a joke. Hitler on Ice, springtime for Hitler. My, it was a knee slapper. And this is not to fault Mel Brooks. Nazis, the SS guys standing in line near the next to the Klansmen in Blazing Saddles. But they survived. And now they have a president that they adore. Again, says James, unfair. The Nazis were assholes. They came out of hard, hard times. This bunch has always been well-heeled and privileged. Stephen Miller, Jewish, had his initial claim to fame out of getting a sad over something in the cafeteria in high school in California. Damn. Note coming from Ron and Raleigh. A link to the wiki page showing immigration numbers to the U.S. You'll find it interesting. There was no immigration from Norway. I wonder why. Well, because Norway's a fairly decent place to live. Probably considerably more decent than this place is to live. I mean, granted, we've got 64 different brands of breakfast cereal to choose from. But somehow that doesn't quite... add up when it comes to quality of life. Four different flavors of super frosted sugar bombs is not quite the same as having one's needs met. Oh, and an idiot over at the Fox Business Network by the name of Trish Regan... I got no clue. Never heard of her. Got her ass handed to her by the Danes. Do not screw with the Danes, okay? These are people whom we know, if we pay attention to our Shakespeare, are fond of playing with poisonous blades, okay? I mean, right. Maybe not so much anymore. But just the same, she declared Denmark to be a shithole country, claiming there's something rotten in Denmark, saying that people are being taxed to death for freebies, that their top tax rate of 56% destroys all incentive for people to work. This, on the other hand, lit up the Danes, who Christian Jensen. So Danes don't want to work. 11 places better than the U.S. in OECD statistics. We are working much more than Americans, at the same time ranking as the world's best in work-life balance. You should come to Denmark if you dare be confronted with facts. Directing that toward Trish Regan over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda Business Network. And then Lars Gert Loza burned her to the ground. Dear Trish Regan, We did some quick research on Denmark's global rankings. Useful context to your story about state of affairs in my country. Go see Denmark for yourself. We'd love to assist, although the lack of cupcake cafes probably will be disappointing. Ooh. Damn, was there even any ash left after that? Or did she just burn right to the ground? God, these stupid, 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 stupid people. And somehow we've managed not to talk about Omarosa or Katrina Pearson, who wore the necklace made out of bullets one time. No. Although at some point in time we very well may yet. Of course. Because it's been all over the news all day long. I haven't been able to turn on the news without seeing Omarosa's face. And frankly, well, okay, see, here we are. We're talking about it. A quick announcement. Thank you very kindly to Hung Like Jesus and to Charlene in Rhode Island. I am proud to say that $60... of Larry and Liberalville's challenge has been met. We have 40 more to go. 10 more folks at four, 10 more people at four, or four more people at 10. Hey, how about four new subscribers via either PayPal or Patreon? PayPal would be better in, under the circumstances, given the deficit. How about four new subscribers? But anyway, that will, and but we get 40 more bucks, and we've met the first 2 days of Larry and Liberalville's keep the horn going challenge, Liberalville challenge, will be met, and that will leave us with only $410 to go to get all caught up. So thank you very kindly, Charlene, and thank you very kindly, Hung Like Jesus. Note coming in from Scott out in San Diego. Subject line, Fort Bliss. At first I thought I'd misheard, and it initially sounded as if Fort Bliss had been deactivated or decommissioned and perhaps sold to a private investor, say a for-profit penal institutional supplier, to be repurposed. But no, apparently Fort Bliss is still on the roster of active U.S. military posts, which way to go legally? One that comes to mind, Congress granted funding for the facility for the specific purpose. Or for a specific purpose or purposes, now Trump and ICE hope to use it for something else. And as you mentioned, there's the issue of toxicity on the property. Perhaps there's a legal challenge via that route. Oh, I think there will be a legal challenge. But damn, the mindset that thinks, let's just take those poor downtrodden people and stick them on a toxic waste dump and maybe let them be involved. Because, you know, we're doing that in this country anyway. We got people in Flint. We got 300,000 people in West Virginia. All unwilling, involuntary participants in long-term studies to find out the toxic effects of things like methylchlorohexane methanol and lead and a bunch of other stuff. So, hey, let's move some of the most fragile people on planet Earth and put them on top of a toxic waste site and see how long it takes them to, you know, have their eyeballs burn out in their heads or get bladder cancer. Bladder cancer's been kind of on my mind lately. A man, a scientist, not far from my age, a brilliant scientist, he was of inestimable help here in Appalachia, a water scientist by the name of Dr. Ben Stout. He worked around here. He worked all over Appalachia testing the waters, people's water, the water that they drank near mountaintop removal sites. He expanded into testing around fracking. We got the sad news a couple of weeks ago that he had just died. He died of bladder cancer. Anyone familiar with the book and the documentary Living Downstream? In fact, I had a conversation with the author some several years ago, and I'm trying to remember her name. I had to look it up. Sandra Steingraber. The documentary was 2010. It gets a 7 out of 10 on IMDb. Sandra Steingraber, who went on to be arrested in civil disobedience, became an anti-fracking activist. She got bladder cancer herself and survived it. And she points out in Living Downstream that the cause of bladder cancer is almost always external and a matter of environmental toxins. Well, Ben Stout got bladder cancer, and he did not survive it. He passed away a couple of weeks ago. He had family, a young family. And not too long back, a couple of years back, in the course of his work trying to find out how the extent and the nature of the poisoning people were being subjected to, Ben got doused in fracking fluid. And it wasn't long after that that he got his diagnosis. These environmental toxins are very real, no matter how desperately the industry and what are usually Republican governments try to say that there's nothing to see here. Keep moving. This is not the toxic waste you're looking for, but it is. It is. Thank you, John. Thank you, John, very, very much. We have now gotten to the $70 mark on Larry and Liberalville's challenge. Thank you, John. Thank you very, very kindly. So only 30 to go. That's good. That's helpful, Barry. But these environmental toxins are very real. And of course, there will be no health care for the people concentrated into these camps in places like Fort Bliss and whatever that Air Force base. No. So they'll just die. They'll just get sick and sicker and sicker, and then they'll just die. Maybe some of them will be let into the country. And later on, they'll just die. Many of them will be sent back to the hell on earth that they tried to escape. And if they manage not to get murdered by the cartel gangs, they'll just die. And there won't be any headlines, and there won't be any bylines, and there won't be any coverage because some poor person from El Salvador or Honduras or Guatemala just died. And there won't be any postmortems, and there won't be any forensic work done, and nobody will say, well, you know, it probably had something to do with all the lead that they ingested when they were in that concentration camp up in Los Estados Unidos. They'll just die. Because we, right now, whether we like it or not, are that kind of country. And we've got to come to grips with that. And more importantly, we need to change that. We need to stop being that, I dare say. But that's the kind of start that we have this evening. Hey, ICE, thugs. Look, I'm one of those people that has not been suckered in by the, we can't get rid of ICE. We can't abolish ICE. ICE keeps us safe and free. Horseshit. ICE has been around since the reign of error, and it was a knee-jerk response in the first place. Barack Obama tried at least to rein it in. And got a tremendous amount of pushback as a result. And now it's completely, the horse is out of the barn and the barn's on fire. Consider this. Reporting by the Boston Globe indicates that that ICE and Customs and Immigration Services, Citizenship and Immigration Services, USCIS, entered into a conspiracy. Now they're not hand in glove. The U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services Department is supposed to facilitate citizenship and immigration for people legally in the United States. ICE are simply fucking Nazis. Sorry, like I said earlier, I'm all over the tap dancing around fascism and the behavior of ICE is sufficient to make me feel quite comfortable saying that they would be just as happy in 1930s, 1940s era Germany. So ICE and USCIS entered into a conspiracy. And what they did is USCIS would invite people seeking citizenship who were undocumented to come to the office, and it would be an ambush. And ICE would then capture them and do to them what ICE does to human beings. Writing to a USCIS employee in an email last October, Andrew Graham, who is a thug, an officer thug with ICE, said, "As far as scheduling goes, I would prefer not to do them all at one time, as it's not only a station on our ability, a strain on our ability to transport and process several arrests at once, but it also has the potential to be a trigger for negative media interests, as we have seen in the past." Huh, how about that? ICE is afraid to work in the sunlight. Well, that's because ICE melts in the sunlight. ICE cannot withstand sunlight. They want to operate in the shadows and behind the baseboards, where there can't be any negative media interests. You know, the Fourth Estate, journalists. The people who are supposed to keep the government honest. Well, you know, when ICE doesn't want to be honest. Back in January, Graham wrote another email. He said, "In my opinion, it makes sense for us to arrest aliens with final removal orders, as they represent the end of the line in the removal process. They're typically the easiest to remove. And at the end of the day, we're in the removal business, and it's our job to locate and arrest them." By God, if they were shoveling them into ovens, the language wouldn't be much fucking different now, would it? ACLU got hold of it, and they described them for what they were, traps. And so now there's a lawsuit against DHS Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen over this sleazy business. Any case has to have a plaintiff. In this case, the plaintiff is a woman by the name of Lillian Calderon. Lillian Calderon is the same age as our oldest daughter here. She's 30. And she's got two little ones. She was brought to the United States at the age of 2 years. That would be 1990. She's lived here all her life. It's the only country she knows. She knows nothing about Guatemala. She and her husband went to the USCIS office in Rhode Island this past January. They wanted to start the process of becoming legal permanent residents of the United States of America. She'd already completed successfully one interview with USCIS. That's when she showed up and was caught up in the trap that was created via the conspiracy between USCIS and ICE. They arrested her. She had done no crime. None. At the time she was brought to the United States of America, she was incapable as a matter of law, by virtue of her age, of committing a crime. ICE snatched her up in January and transported her to the ICE concentration camp in Boston. Her husband, Luis Calderon, said, "Ever since that day, our daughter asks me why her mom has left. I've lost my best friend. I'm asking for her release because she needs to be with her family and her children miss her. I don't understand why this is happening when we thought we were doing everything right to keep our family together." Well, Mr. Calderon, it's happening because this country is in the grip of a vicious gang of fascist thugs who despise you, Mr. Calderon, despise your wife, Mr. Calderon, despise your child, Mr. Calderon, because you're not quite as white as they want people to be fully vested citizens of the United States of America. Look at the nice white septuagenarian couple who became citizens just last week, those lovely Navzeses who had a first lady for a sponsor. Well, first stripper, I mean, whatever you're going to call her. Mrs. Calderon is not the only one, though. An immigrant from Brazil, Lucimar de Souza, she was arrested in January, again, as part of this conspiracy between USCIS and ICE. She was called to the USCIS office so that she could prove her marriage was legitimate. She was released back in May. At a press conference, she said, "They put you in there and you have no idea when you're going to leave. Each day it's one more day, but you never know. You hope it's soon, but when?" NBC reported recently, like Monday, that during the Trump regime, the arrests of non-criminal undocumented immigrants has tripled. This number might you might find it a little shocking, or knowing what fascism does, perhaps you won't. But in the first 14 months in which Donald Trump was in the White House, 58,000, more than 58,000 undocumented immigrants who had no criminal record, no criminal convictions whatsoever, were arrested by ICE and other agencies. And in many of those instances, there wasn't even an arrest warrant. Now, the law is kind of specific on how you can arrest somebody without a warrant. Crimes committed in the presence of an officer, for instance. But take, for instance, the case of Ms. Calderon. Mrs. Calderon committed no crime in the presence of the officer. Oh, wait, she was in America as an undocumented immigrant. So that's a continuing crime. But no, it's not, because when she was brought here, she was 2 years old and incapable of forming the necessary mens rea, the necessary criminal intent to commit a crime. You know, way back when I was having that cup of coffee in law school, they taught us a bunch of maxims. Equity will not permit a wrong without a remedy. Where's the remedy? I guess the remedy is in the hope that the ACLU will prove successful. But that's all it is a hope. Steve in New York, in regard to ICE, says, I'm going to go ahead and disagree that they're Nazis. That's too general. A much more pointed and specific description is Gestapo-Polizei, a.k.a. Gestapo. This means the state police. The translation is somewhat benign, but the German and the accompanying connotation are both appropriately sinister. Maybe there will be a follow-up on this story. Maybe they'll win. I hope they do. And I guess this is a sign of the difference in the program here as compared to others. I imagine this time of day, most of the programs coming on are focused on the primaries in Wisconsin and Minnesota and so forth. That's fine. That's a whale of a gubernatorial primary in Wisconsin. At least two really good candidates on the ballot there, Kathleen Vineout and Mike McCabe. But an eight-way primary, damn, somebody's going to wind up with some hurt feelings. And there's entirely too great a likelihood that somewhere down the road, we're going to get. I can scarcely stomach the idea that we're going to get another 4 years of Snot Walker and that Wisconsin will be once again Fitz Walker stand for four more years. Ew. There's a lower house to be taken back in Wisconsin. They're trying to do the same thing in Minnesota. And whatever comes out of this, well, the proof in the pudding, well, the pudding doesn't come out of the refrigerator until November. You know what I mean by that. So that's just a few of the stories that caught my eye for this Titanic Tuesday. The Blue Hen over on Twitter says, no warrant, no uniform. The thing I find crazy and scary is that they're plain clothed, no ID. Yeah, that's not exactly within the ambit of what we would expect in a functioning constitutional republic based upon representative democratic ideas. Once again, I'll note that I'm back to my dirty little habit of watching that TV program every morning over on MSNBC. And I heard Joe Scarborough today ask of Elise Jordan, whose title on that program keeps changing. At one point in time, she was, what was she? Well, she was the former aide to Rand Paul. And then she was a former something else, and now they're identifying her as a co-host of some podcast. She's getting further and further and further away from her Republican roots, just as Joe Scarborough continues to try to pretend that he's not still a Republican. They all are. They're all still Republicans, and they'll go back to being Republicans if the rest of us will just do the heavy fucking lifting and rid the country of the tormented, manic, demented reign of Julius Geezer. And that, then if we want to talk about something like Medicare for all or a public option, or, there will immediately be cries of, oh no, you'll break, the country can't afford that, that will be communism. Yeah. They're not going to stop being who they are. But today he asked of Elise Jordan, well, where's a small government Republican to go? Where's a small government conservative to go in November? And these buzzwords exist, and sometimes they just trigger me a little bit. And in this particular instance, it's that phrase, small government. It drives me batshit. Because it's not small government conservatism. I mean, it appears in right wing magazines and it gets brooded about by the opioid junkies behind microphones, ostensibly in recovery. But it's not a political theory. It's not a political reality. It can't ever be a political reality without the complete collapse of government, at least this government. Small government conservatism, please. How small? When's the last time you heard a conservative braying about small government conservatism in regard to, say, the Pentagon? The only time they ever bray about small government conservatism is when they're pissing and moaning about about the poor's getting something like, food or shelter or clothing or education. That's the only time. Or Social Security or Medicare. That's where you, and it's just a cheap and shitty little dodge for saying, I don't like the government doing things for the American people. Small government conservatism never seems to have any problems with new fighter jets or Space Force or bullshit. They're only small government conservatives if somebody's getting something and they feel like they're being stiffed in the process. Going back to ICE for a moment, Steve in New York says, here's the real kicker about ICE. I looked them up. They're officially considered law enforcement. They're not, in fact, police, but they're allowed to call themselves police. Try that new speak on for size. No, I'm not kidding. Almost makes you think that they might be a sort of a shadow group of partisan enforcers, doesn't it? What color? Do they wear brown shirts? Just asking. Ron, in Raleigh, I wonder, no badge, no warrant, no ID. Could you stand your ground and shoot their fascist asses dead? These arrogant assholes need to pay the price. I was in fear for my life. Seems to work for the cops. Well, but then the cops would come and shoot your ass dead. Because, no, you can't. And God only knows what ICE would do to an immigrant family that tried to stand their ground. They'd be 6 feet under the ground before they knew what hit them. Hey, thanks very kindly to Ralps, brand new subscriber this evening. I mean, Ralps has been supporting the program for eons. Thank you, Ralps. But Ralps jumped into the subscription pool this evening because Ralps noticed that, well, we don't, we got one subscriber on the 13th and one subscriber on the 14th. So now we got two on the 14th. Thank you, Ralps. And hey, that takes us down to only $20 to go to meet Larry in Liberalville's first two days of challenges. So hopefully we can keep up with that. $20 to go. And that would be wonderful to scrounge up those other $20. Small government conservatism. Scott in San Diego notes, when they say A, they really mean B. Small government, my fat white ass, Bob. When they say small government, you should immediately hear selectively focused and attentive government who support or fund massive spending for programs that further enrich their already obscenely wealthy, powerful corporate masters. Exactly. Small government conservatives, yeah, you know, they want one little old blue-haired lady who works 3 hours a day signing the Social Security checks. What? You didn't get yours this month? Well, you know, we got a small government. Hey, what's that? Your workers' compensation claim hasn't been processed, and you're on the brink of starvation because you got hurt serving some capitalist corporation? Well, we'll get to it as quick as we can. But after all, we've got a small government here. It's a small and ineffective government, and that's at the end of the day, that's what they're after. It's not small they want; it's ineffective. Because small government is simply a canard for the fact that they despise government in the first place. Or else they despise government that does things for people other than them. Especially the ones that are the wrong color, don't you understand? Yeah, right. So here we are at the top of the hour. God knows oodles more stories to go into. I've got to check something out here real quick. It'll just take me a minute here. I want to see. Hold on here a sec. I got one more channel to try to run audio through. And I want to see if there's any way humanly possible to do it. And it ain't looking good. Bear with me, sorry. But we got the Green News Report this evening. And I, for one, always enjoy Brad and Desi. You hear all that clicking and clacking there? And I'd like to see if there's some way of bringing audio through that doesn't have a boatload of reverb in it. And just a second here.
The Trump administration.
Son of a gun, it works. Okay, that's a beginning. Sorry to be teching on the air, but... sometimes you have no real choice. Randy in PA says, it's such a small government that it will run up $4.4 trillion in federal spending this fiscal year as opposed to the typical, as in recent years, $3.6 trillion in spending. That's the whole thing. Small is in the eye of the beholder, Randy. Bill in Allentown, the small government conservatism. Hey, Bob, there's no such thing. They just want a small government, a dictatorship. That's what they really want. Well, they want somebody who can decide which parts of the government will be small and which parts, you know, one part will make one part smaller and another part will make you big. You know, it's sort of an Alice in Wonderland government. Ron in Raleigh asks, again, I wonder, how much will the space farce add to the budget over the next 10 years? Enough to provide Medicare for all, I wonder? Probably enough to provide Medicare for all the planet, Ron. But we can't have that because socialism. Because then nobody will want to work. Nobody will have any incentive. They'll all just be laying around pining to go to the hospital for free all the time. Yeah, I know. That just beats cats. Yeah. Well, let's see. My little experiment has failed. Partially, at least. So let's run over to the phones and check in with Scott. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bob. How you doing? Let me turn off the fan. It was a little cooler yesterday than it had been. I can do without a little more comfortably. How are you hearing me? Are you hearing me okay?
You're okay. You're a little whatever you were using last time, I think, was a little better. This one's got a little more treble to it. It's a little tinnier, but it'll be fine.
All right. Okay, that's because I'm using something else. I'm trying to think what the timeline was. I think it was Friday, or maybe it was Saturday. I was talking to my older brother, and we talked for a good long while. And
is this the is this the former Secret Service guy?
No, that's the younger brother. The older brother's okay. He's got viable brain cells to bang together and does so quite frequently, as a matter of fact. But he's the only one of the family that's still living in the D.C. area.
Okay.
The rest of us are scattered to the literally the four corners. My sister's in Maine. The younger brother, the gun-toting brother, is in Florida. And I'm out here in San Diego. So... we've got three of the four corners. We'll have to get my older brother up to Vancouver, Washington, or somewhere, and then we'll need one more space to have a bingo.
Yes,
bingo.
Indeed. Yeah. I'll take Cahokia, Illinois, to block.
There you go. Portable. What is that? What is that one? Potables. That category.
Oh, potent potables. Potent potables. Yes.
Potent potables. I could use a potent potable long ago now. But anyway, what happened? I finished talking to my brother, and I set the iPhone down in its accustomed, you know, its usual place. And I Dej was looking at me, and I could see light coming along the side of the device. So I said, well, wait a minute. I've never seen that before. Well, come to find out, it's as if the screen of the thing is pulling away from the body of the phone. And I had read that could mean a battery that's swelling. and could burst into flame.
So your iPhone went to its long home?
No, it still works, functions wonderfully. As a matter of fact, I had been those batteries in that particular model, the iPhone 6 and some other models, there was such a problem with something that Apple was doing to throttle down the phone's speed so as to save on old battery performance. And there was some kind of lawsuit or something. And Apple said, well, okay, here's what we'll do. For all of you affected by that issue, instead of $79 for a new battery,
we'll charge you $29,
and that offer is good for affected users, qualified users, up through the end of this year, which is what I had planned to do. But I looked at it, and I said, well, wait a minute. I could take the iPhone 6 in and have them put in a new battery. That doesn't necessarily mean that the screen will go back to where it was. And plus, it's like an over two-year-old phone. So I got on the line with my carrier, and I signed up and got a new phone, which is what I'm talking to you on now. But I had just paid that thing off because I'm able to buy it where they add an amount to my monthly wireless bill. And then once the term is up, the phone is mine, which would have been the only way I could afford one of these things. But I'm up to an iPhone 7. This is my fourth one since, I guess, 2011. And they're nifty devices. I prefer them to, well, Apple products by and large, I prefer them, to all other pieces of tech. But that's not really why.
Well, you're going to get hate mail now. It's only fair to let you know.
Oh, I know. I always do.
The Android cult will be on you like a duck on a June bug.
Indeed.
If you'd said you preferred Android, you'd get hate mail from the Apple cult.
Yeah, there's no winning in this. You know, it's like being in American political discourse. There's no winning, especially on the cable channels. You know, it's just one go round after another, and nothing ever gets settled in a way that works for everybody in a tangible way in real life. But anyway, I had a couple of things I want to run by you real quick. The first is a headline in today's Washington Post. More than 300 accused priests listed in Pennsylvania report on Catholic Church sex abuse. Pennsylvania Supreme Court today released a sweeping grand jury report on sex abuse in the Catholic Church, listing more than 300 accused clergy, detailing a systematic cover-up effort by church leaders for over 70 years. The state attorney general says more than 1,000 child victims were identified, but the grand jury believes there are more. And it's interesting that this report would come up today, because just the other day I was looking for something to watch, and I rewatched Spotlight, the movie about the Boston Globe investigative reporters who literally laid open the full details of the abuses in the Catholic Church, not just in Boston, but worldwide. And for anyone who's not seen that film, it's on Netflix. Because with this report today, we see that it's not a problem that's been resolved or done away with. But at the end of the film, after the credits have rolled, there's a link. Let me get the precise title. It's Bishop, singular, accountability.org. And if you go to that site, you can search by state or by name of priests and even some nuns who have been caught up in this. So I looked through there, having been raised a Catholic, and one of my parish priests in the 60s, when I was a young child, was listed. He later committed suicide around 1990, I think. Two or three priests from the all-boys Catholic high school that I attended for 2 years are listed. And the lists give the names of the priests, also whether they're accused or convicted or both, and also details news reports of the improprieties and the legal disposition of the cases, if any. And I'm telling you, it made me sad. There was just, because you think, you hear about this stuff and you think, well, it's happening someplace else.
Right.
Well, the someplace else was right there where I was growing up in my formative years. And it just made me very sad, Bob. I thank my lucky stars that I was not among the victims, but I could have been, because this parish priest was very friendly and attentive toward me when I was in second and third grade, as I recall. He seemed like the nicest fellow you could ever want to meet or talk to. Always engaging, always interested in what you were up to, always had a good word. But there was something beyond that that thankfully I did not get caught up in when many others had. And it's interesting to note, as was noted in the movie Spotlight, they move these priests around like pieces on a game board. Because that's what it was, Bob. It was a game. It was fox and hounds or something, you know, keeping the priests out of hot water, you know, not only from...
If they'd been in the business, instead of, you know, being basically a rape ring, if they'd been in, say, the olive oil business or something like that, we'd call them, you know, a racketeer-influenced corrupt organization and shut it the hell down.
You're damn right.
You've kind of taken us into a conversation that, I presume it's not going to have a resolution, but this is another place where the First Amendment gets us in trouble. Now that's not to say I don't dislike the First Amendment, but I do dislike using it as a shield for what is obviously wrong and criminal, okay? Just like incitement to riot, it's okay that, you know, there's a history of American legal precedents that says it's okay to impinge upon speech when the speech is clearly intended to bring about violence, okay, or public mayhem or public risk, you know, yelling fire in a crowded theater, that kind of thing.
Yeah, but I think H.Rap Brown was arrested in Cambridge, Maryland in the late 60s on just such a charge. He was addressing a bunch of black folks in the crowd, and there had been unrest, and they arrested him thinking that he was inciting more of it. And I forget the disposition of it. But, yeah, that's just how that rule plays out. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, see, if you go back, because history, if you go back to the original discussions about the Bill of Rights, and I'm sure you're already aware of this, Scott, there was a distinct split of opinion in 1787, 1788, as to whether we needed one. Now, Virginia had a bill of religious liberty, yada yada yada, and Madison himself, who authored most of the Constitution and damned well, ran the hijack job on the convention that was supposed to tweak the Articles of Confederation, and then boom, there was no more Articles of Confederation. Madison didn't think we needed one, because Madison didn't think that religion was within the purview of the federal government at all. And that it went without saying that the federal government couldn't impinge upon a person's religious liberty or impinge upon their right to free speech. He was a bit of an optimist, Madison. But the larger question is, especially because the right wing, the white wing, are so fond of pondering constitutional originalism, do you reckon, Scott, that there were predatory, child-raping priests in 1787? Isn't it almost impossible that there weren't?
Well, yeah, because it's the nature of the
institution,
repressive, restricted, hung-up mindset of virtually all religious groups that I've been able to discern. In their so-called sacred writings, and in their teachings and pronouncements over history,
and that was an era where students were routinely abused physically. They were beaten. They were thrashed for not getting their lessons or not getting their lessons right. And who's to say that wasn't what got them off? What got off the abusive And as was often the case, they were the teachers were men of the cloth.
Well, and you know, as far as how back it goes on the continent of North America, you read, I believe you started reading that book Fantasyland from last year by I believe it's Eric Anderson. Anderson, which lays out the influence of theology and delusional thinking of other sorts throughout from the history of the world all the way up until the book was published a year ago, to help explain how we wound up, you know, I mean, the ultimate example of a result of delusional, mad mindset is the elevation of Donald John Trump to where he is. And you can think back to his many visits down to Thomas Road Baptist Church in Lynchburg, Virginia, who have flocked around him, literally, to take him as one of their own, even though he would not have remotely passed muster.
Well, and the reason I'm going down this primrose path,
yeah,
is for the purpose of asking the question. Does a religious institution that is ostensibly protected by the First Amendment and granted, tax-free status and tax-exempt status, when it is proven to have engaged in, it's not, as you note, in this story out of Pennsylvania, and frankly, I was going to save it till tomorrow, you know, prayer meeting Wednesday and everything, but we're already there.
Yeah.
When a religious institution proves itself not merely to have the presence of pedophile clerics in its midst, but then is also proven, you know, pretty much beyond a shadow of a doubt, to have tolerated it, to have known about it, and to have actively moved to cover it up, then isn't there, at some point in time, should it not stop receiving the protections that it receives under the First Amendment? Well, I mean, Jesus Christ, we've got a death penalty in the NCAA for football programs that take $100 handshakes.
Yeah.
Now, to look at the other side of that coin, no matter how many child rapes took place at Penn State, the NCAA still couldn't find it in itself to kill Penn State's football program because there would have been rioting in the streets.
I believe to this present moment, there's a statue of the coach.
Paterno.
Yeah. Unless they tore it down, but there doesn't seem to be a lot of interest in tearing statues to honor people who have engaged in despicable behavior down.
Well, I mean, I'm looking at one story right now about a priest who was the subject of a bunch of child abuse complaints. And he quit his parish, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But then he reached out to the diocese and asked for and received, Scott, a recommendation, wait for it, to work at Disneyland.
It's a small world after all. And the thing is, they like them small and malleable and impressionable and vulnerable.
I mean, does that not just make you want to run out and tear at your hair and eat dirt and run rabbits? At what point in time does a responsible government say, "Look, you know, you guys are going to have to close up shop"? Everybody going to a Catholic church, you know, they got plenty of room in the Episcopal church, and they don't have the problems you guys have. Just go on over. And the Catholic Church is going to shut down until it solves its problems. It will not, or I mean, could we not at least say, given the fact that that the Roman Catholic Church is root and branch poisoned by sexual abuse of children, that their tax exempt status is hereby withdrawn because. This is a pattern and practice of violations of the law on the level of felonies, whether it be the felony of the child sexual abuse or the felonies of the conspiracies to cover those things up. Disneyland, Scott.
Yeah. Well, and to answer the question, I would advise anyone hoping to see change in that organization or inflicted change in terms of dropping their favored tax status, not to hold their breath, because the Catholic Church has never really changed in any meaningful way. In my lifetime, there have been Catholic churches who in mixed congregations, racially mixed congregations, within my lifetime, Bob, have let the white communicants receive the body and blood of our sacred Lord first, and only then made the black parishioners, communicants, receive the sacrament. I mentioned my high school, in which several of these priests were stationed there during my time. You got to remember, 4 miles south of Washington, the height of the Vietnam War, lots of Catholic like daddies in the military or government or industrial complex businesses. I got suspended for 3 days for passing out leaflets announcing an anti-war demonstration. Now, wait a minute. All along in Catholic school, they taught thou shalt not kill. Okay, thou shalt not murder. They taught me love one another. as do unto others as you would have them do unto you. You know, the nature of Christ, according to them, was loving and compassionate and giving an example of service and unity. And none of that, unless they inscribe something on the millions of tons of bombs and napalm that they dropped onto Vietnam, none of that activity comes under the heading of being Christ-like, you know. So, and then you add the sexual abuse, massive sexual abuse.
Well, I mean, not that we're sitting here cataloging the failings of the Roman Catholic Church. I mean, you were raised Roman Catholic. I wasn't.
There's not time enough, first of all. And it's an exercise in futility because by design, the place will never change in any meaningful, useful way.
Well, what I was going to say is, as I was driving home last week, I heard a story on National Petroleum Radio all about how after 1,600 years, the Roman Catholic Church finally figured out that it's not okay to execute people at all, no matter the crime.
Yeah, yeah.
It only took, you know, and granted, you know, their avatar was publicly executed in a particularly heinous fashion, you know, assuming that it actually happened.
Well, and not only that, but on trumped up charges instigated by the religious authorities of the time.
Yep.
Look that up in your Funkin' Wagonol.
But we pat them on the head, Scott, and we say, "Oh, let's give them a cookie." They finally figured out that capital punishment is wrong. Now, if only they could figure out it's okay not to fuck little boys.
I don't pat them on the head for Pope Francis. He's among them. He's of them, and he may smile and seem compassionate and not stay in the palace and drive his own fucking Peugeot or whatever the hell Fiat, whatever the hell he drives. But it's going to come out, Bob, just as it did with the German Pope and just as it did with John Paul II. I make that distinction because John Paul I apparently was murdered because he was going to uncover the abuses, financial abuses, of the Vatican Bank.
And then there's old John the 23rd.
Like I say, there's a thread, a line that runs, a through line, that nothing ever changes, and we find out about it eventually, long after many of these people are gone. There's no recourse at that point. But to answer your larger question, I don't pat them on the head for coming to their senses about capital punishment. I don't pat them on the head for settling financially with these affected children and families. I don't pat them on the head for anything. And I was fortunate enough, as in my late teens, to see the nature of the beast, as it were, and not be part of that organization. Because it did not, none of what they were doing rang true and holy for me. Even though they claimed that they were true, literally the one true church for a long, long time, and were holy, where that shit was not going on, far from it. So no, I won't pat them on the head for anything. I might kick them in the ass.
Well, I was being figurative because. The NPR story I heard, you know, they had an interview with Sister Helen Prejean, and she said, and whoever was interviewing her said, well, I mean, the bishops have withheld communion from people over supporting abortion. Do you suppose they'll withhold communion over Catholics who continue to support capital punishment? And she almost sounded like she thought she was talking to somebody who'd been dropped on his head, and she said, no, that'll never happen. Because it may be official policy, but you know, bringing Senator Senator lethal injection into the fold by not letting him have his cracker and his swig of Mogan David. No, that ain't gonna happen. Now they'll do that to Senator Right to Choose, but not to Senator Lethal Injection.
Yeah, wasn't Senator Kerry maybe not denied communion, but didn't the bishop or the cardinal or somebody call him out in public? Or
Oh yeah. I remember that. It well. But the larger question is, does our fetishized view of the First Amendment prevent us from taking a proactive stance on an institution that is arguably so corrupt as to outweigh whatever good it's doing? And that in itself is another question. You look at Catholic Charities. You look at the good work that they do. If you can get past the whole no man can put a little latex thingy on his John Thomas kind of foolishness. No pill, nothing, right. We'd rather have a poverty world burned up by HIV than to try to, you know, prevent it. No. If you look past all of that and you look at the good that some Roman Catholic outfits do, is it enough? Well, you know, it's the question of trying to find enough righteous men to keep God from, you know, doing whatever it was he did to Sodom and Gomorrah. You understand what I'm getting
good
at?
Luck with that. Yeah.
I mean, does a civil society, Scott, have either a right or a duty or both to rein in a corrupt organization that has proven itself to be a den of rapists?
Well, I would think that on some level, these are corporate entities. They're not just religious organizations. If I'm not mistaken, just about every religious group in the land is a corporate entity of some sort, with papers and procedures and bylaws and any number of things. And there, I'm sure there have got to be provisions in the granting of corporate status for them if they're not living up to what they claim they're being about. Now, this doesn't address the First Amendment in terms of their freedoms of belief, but I'm talking just in terms of tax status. I mean, do you get where I'm going with that?
Well, yeah, I do. And in fact, you reminded me of something that happened a few years back when another child sexual abuse horror was being uncovered. Wasn't it a diocese in Milwaukee? And wasn't it Scott Walker's handpicked lackeys on the Wisconsin Supreme Court or something like that? I may have it mixed up. I mean, I'm delving into the neurons of my memory now. But
in other words, the abuser or cover upper of the abuser was pals with Walker.
Well, no, but the court. And maybe it was a U.S. court, I'm not sure. But they allowed, the abuse victims had gotten close enough to almost get their hands on the church's money.
Mm-hmm.
And the bishop or the archbishop or the 32nd degree noble potentate or whatever it was suddenly moved all the money into the cemetery fund.
Mm-hmm.
To keep the victims from getting at the money, and then the diocese declared bankruptcy or something, and the court said, "Oh yeah, you can do that."
Yeah, they're just using the system as it currently exists. But see, that brings back into question, maybe we need to change things, their manner of existence currently. maybe we need to revisit a lot of things that we have taken for granted, you know, in terms of tax law and in terms of, you know, just because you're a religious person, so-called, or in a religious authority, so-called, you still have to be, you're liable when you break the law, or at least should be.
And this particular report, again, only covers a part of one state. The diocese is affected. The dioceses that this report details are Harrisburg, Pittsburgh, Allentown, Scranton, Erie, and Greensburg. Philadelphia and Altoona Johnstown have already been investigated. Now, here's, okay, so we're going to, and by the way, I had a note from Flavio in Wisconsin who said the American Catholic Church is very different from the Latin American Catholic Church. And Cardinal Spellman was a Nazi racist. No argument there. But then again, you have to remember that from Chile to Argentina and other parts of the southern half of the Western Hemisphere, the same problems are in evidence.
Well, you look at that movie Spotlight, at the end of it, they list all of the cities in the U.S. and places around the world where this abuse was running rampant. And it's enough to make you lose your goobers.
Oh, and it's not just sexual abuse. My God, the Magdalen Laundries in Ireland.
Oh, yeah. That movie. I remember.
Poor suffering. You know, as if the Irish had not suffered enough under the English and suffered enough under their own internecine violence, they had Holy Mother Church sitting on top of them, murdering their own children and burying them in septic tanks.
Well, read Frank McCourt's wonderful book, Angela's Ashes.
Yes.
If you want a sense of Ireland in that time. And the church's iron-fisted authority over people. See, now you're getting me mad. I was just sad before. Now I'm getting.
Well, I'm sorry. But it is infuriating. And the thing, and I kind of want to loop back for a minute here, and I want to remind us all that one of the states that made it possible for Donald J. Trump to be president of the United States via the racist anachronism that is the Electoral College, is, of course, Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And so you had to have people who were thoroughly steeped enough in right-wing authoritarianism that they could look at a candidate who admitted that he sexually abused women, that he grabbed them by their genitals, kissed them against their will, and still looked at that guy and said, well, you know, I can vote for that guy. You'll never convince me that right-wing authoritarian Roman Catholics weren't a big part of that.
Well, there's probably numbers. There's a statistical breakdown, I'm sure, of who voted for this guy, demographically. You know, we're probably right down to hat size.
Well, it does seem like everything else has been teased out of the election, but
with the midterms just weeks away, let's remind people, as you said, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, that fool was put in proximity to the levers of fucking power and all that go with it, on the basis of something like 77,400 and some odd popular votes, which were enough in those three states to give him the Electoral College victory.
And if you haven't gone out the door tearing at your hair, eating dirt, and running rabbits yet, well, consider the response of the Bishop of Harrisburg earlier this month. Knowing that this report was coming, and having a fairly good idea that they'd been kind of been caught. He released the names of 70 members of the clergy and of seminarians who, since the 1940s, have been accused of various forms of child sexual abuse. He also promised along the way that the bishops of the diocese who were over them would be, well, their names would be removed from diocesan buildings that have been named after them, and what he called any position of honor throughout the diocese in central Pennsylvania. Well, I'm so glad. So we're going to take the dead people's names off the buildings, but well, there's just not much we're going. And the thing is, in many instances, the cover up is worse than the crime because a lot of these people are dead. They got away with it, and for my purposes, I'm not content to say, well, you know, they're all getting pineapples up the ass in hell now. They're getting the old reverse pineapple next to Hitler up in, down in hell. That doesn't cut it with me. Justice is something that is delivered. Justice is something that is administered on earth or not at all. Because there is no guarantee of justice in the afterlife, even if you believe in it. Because I mentioned I mentioned John the 23rd a little bit ago. That man got in a world of shit before he became Pope. You know, back in the early 1960s, you know, Vatican II and all of that.
Yeah.
He got in a world of shit because he suggested it might be a nice idea to excommunicate Adolf fucking Hitler. Because they really hadn't gotten around to that.
Jesus.
And there was an uproar over it. And Hitler didn't get excommunicated. It would have been entirely symbolic, but for people who believe in that in that baloney, it would have meant that Hitler was in hell. And the problem was, and I know angels, heads of pins, but because of the fundamental flaws in the operation of the theology, at worst, Hitler's working off some shit in purgatory and will eventually get the harp and the halo, according to church doctrine.
Well, there you go. There you go. And this, Bob, this should clue people in who think that merely finding out about stuff is going to lead to any meaningful change. The Catholic Church in particular, and religion overall, and the United States government and other governments besides, there's not a lot of hope for any change in the near term in any of these organizations, simply because they talk a good game. They take names off of buildings. They do cosmetic, meaningless shit that doesn't move us toward meaningful change. And, you know, as relentlessly optimistic as I am often accused of being and claim to be, I'm a cynic in some ways. And when I look at the Holy Roman Church, and I, you know, some of my family members are still practicing, and some of them did right up until the time that they weren't around to practice anymore. The through line is, if any change might occur, the means to bring that into being is glacially slow, and I'm talking about pre-global climate change glacially slow, because glaciers move faster than Wile E. Coyote in today's world. I'm talking about back when glaciers were real slow, you know, as to appear not to be moving at all.
But the next thing you know, you're 100 years down the road and it's 100 miles further into Europe. Yeah, I get it.
Exactly. And you know, as much as I would like to see the change in our government and in these, pardon me, in these organizations and in business and in all areas of society in this country and in the world, there are, as much as I might want it, or millions of other people might want it, there are people who benefit financially and in terms of power by keeping it precisely as it is, if not making it more abusive. So we have got our work cut out for us, boys and girls. Growing up in the 60s, as crazy as that decade was, and doing what I could as a little rabble rouser and thinking that things were going to change in some meaningful way, I guess on some level I knew that they wouldn't, but it was worth trying for. And I kind of got off the track, and then I got back.
Well,
on
because
it.
You actually believed what you believed the good stuff they were telling you, the social justice stuff, the righteous stuff, the Jesus-y stuff. It's largely the same thing that I experienced as a little Baptist. You know, when you're a little kid, they got you down in the basement with the little old blue-haired ladies, and you sing "Jesus Loves Me" and "Jesus Loves the Little Children," and all of that, and they tell you about God is love, and then you get about 5-6 years old, and they let you go up and sit through the longest hour on earth while some guy who's half out of his mind is screaming at you about how God loves you so much that he's going to burn you for all eternity if you don't come down the aisle at the end of the goddamn service.
Yeah. Screwy, ain't it?
Yeah, well, it is. And just to add insult to injury in the overall story of this report, please understand that the Roman Catholic Church did everything in its power. Fortunately, the prayers of the bishops and the archbishops and the cardinals and whatnot apparently went unheeded to stop this report from being made public.
Oh, I'm sure.
The people of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, and of course, Clarence in Philly reminds me, the unofficial name of Pennsylvania is the Commonwealth of Pennsyltucky. The people of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania had to go to their state Supreme Court to get the state Supreme Court to command that the report be released. And even with the release of the report, Scott, some 300 pages or more, it still was released with redactions in it. Because I guess there are some living priests who had to be protected. Holy shit. Or you know, if it was for purposes of protecting victims, that's one thing. But some names were redacted in the release.
Well, and this leads me to this, Bob, and I wonder, this is one of the things that I wanted to mention. And I, like I said, I know that I've taken the program off into a different area altogether, but I was so...
No, it's pretty Titanic. It counts.
I was emotionally impacted more than I'm really expressing when I saw these names. These are people in whose care I was put by trusting parents.
Yeah, it's one of those moments where you miss your when your parents are gone, you miss them, because you'd like to say, "Mom, Dad, did you even suspect?"
Who knows? Because there's even today there's a lot of denial going on in the minds of well-meaning, faithful people in that church and others that the organizations are beyond reproach. But what I wanted to mention was an obituary of A.W. Richard Sipe, S-I-P-E, a leading expert on clergy sex abuse, dies at 85. Richard Sipe. He was played in the movie Spotlight in voice only by, I can't think of his name, the actor, Richard Jenkins, possibly, character actor of great renown. But anyway, read that obituary, because what Mr. Syke did, and I posted this on my Facebook, the horrific priest sexual abuse scandal had many villains, even more victims, and damn few heroes. Richard Syke helped bring the nature and full scope of this continuing tragedy to light. And I wouldn't ordinarily say this, given my theological status nowadays, but if I were to say it, I don't know anyone who deserves a God bless you more than someone like Richard Syke. And if you
give him 500 years, they may get around to making him a saint.
Yeah.
Because in a way, I guess it's a miracle that there has been anything resembling justice on this earth whatsoever.
No, don't hold your breath. But I'm going to let you go, I think. But let me give you this website again for anyone interested who maybe grew up Catholic as I did, and maybe now is wondering what kind of proximity did I have way back when to some of these monsters. And it's bishopaccountability.org. And you can search by state or by name, and take some tissues with you, because I would be surprised if anybody who checks that website doesn't come away with at least a handful of familiar names. This is the way our orbits are in life, and my orbit was off just enough to where I dodged asteroids or cataclysms of a life-changing nature that, I mean, if there is an actual God, I would have to say thank God that I was not among the casualties. You know, I think of the Vietnam War, 58,000 names of people lost in that senseless exercise. What would the wall who were lost in one way or another to this evil exercise of some long years standing, as far back as you can see, let's say. I don't think there's property enough or granite enough to construct such a wall. And that says something. I've put us in a bummer. I mean, just...
No, you haven't. You know, it's not a bummer. It partakes of the clean light of day, the sanitizing effect of sunlight. These are things that are done, that were done in the dark, and only by exposing it is there any hope that it will stop happening. Because that's the other thing that goes with this, Scott, and we could do the rest of the program and probably the rest of the week on this. It's still going on. And lest anyone think that I'm being unfair, in particular to the Roman Catholic Church, it's still going on in Baptist churches, in Assemblies of God, in Churches of Christ, in Episcopalian churches, Presbyterian churches, Lutheran churches, Hell's Bells. It's probably going on in Unitarian assemblies. I'd like to think it's not, but it probably is. The Congregationalists have this problem, too. The Jews have this problem. The Muslims have this problem. Do the Baha'i? I'm not sure. Does it happen among the Sikhs? I don't know. The Hindus? I don't know. But I'm guessing It happens in every authority structure that has ever occurred to the mind of humanity. And yes, I'll go ahead and say to the mind of man, because most of these structures were conceived by men. Okay? So, no, it's not a bummer. But what you say about a memorial, a cenotaph, if you will, well, I mean, I don't bring it up and I don't talk about it all the time, but I can tell you that that sort of thing, regardless of whom the perpetrator is, I mean, who, not whom, leaves a mark. And it leaves scars that are years, lifetimes in length, that left untreated leave the victim to sort of do their best to sort it out on their own. And that attempt to sort it out can take the form of self-medication, be it booze, drugs. It can be acting out behavior. It can be hypersexuality. Nobody goes through that in childhood and comes away from it unscathed. And to the same extent that the folks in the 12-step programs, like with alcohol, say that you are always in recovery, well, to a certain extent, you're always in recovery this way too. There's somebody on Twitter that I follow, and she speaks eloquently to the rights of the victims of child sexual abuse. Her name, and she's from Western PA. I'm pretty sure she's a Steelers fan. Her name is Dani Bostick. D-A-N-I-B-O-S-T-I-C-K. I have not checked her feed to see what she's saying about this, because this is right in her own backyard. But I'll bet that whatever she does say about it will have a tremendous degree of relevance.
Yeah, I mean, if she's active in calling that stuff out and research on it, and it's all happening right there in her backyard, yeah, I would say she would. And I don't know how I came up with the analogy, but when I talked about all the orbits, think about everybody you've encountered in the course of your lifetime, and each of them having a separate and distinct orbit, and the notion of an asteroid or something knocking someone out of a decent, predictable, rational, safe orbit
to go wobbling off into space as best they can. Sure.
Yeah, but I mean the notion is, intellectually, spiritually, emotionally, God knows, psychologically, careening in the wake of that. Careening is the only word.
No, it's the perfect word. And by the way, Bill in Allentown wants to know.
Another.
That website is bishopaccountability.org.
Yeah.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure, because if one person's asking, others will as well.
Yeah, and there are different links, but the one that interested me was the search links by name or by state. But, yeah, I mean, some of us may never know, and many of us may only have, in hindsight, a sense of how close we did or didn't come to be encountered among the victims of these monsters.
Yeah.
And, you know.
You talk about those orbits. Go ahead.
Yeah. Let me just say this, and I've said this in the context sometimes of people who I don't agree with politically, that I will be rhetorical, I will be fervent in my dialogue, but I always want to be conscious of the risk of trying to rob them of their humanity. In fairness to these priests who I knew, okay, not in a biblical way, but was exposed to, interacted with, they have their story in terms of what caused them to get knocked out of their orbit. And a lot of this stuff is cyclical from what I've read. Abused tend to become abusers many times, unless they really have a close encounter with themselves and get into some kind of help or recovery or treatment or something.
Well,
you
I
don't want to cut them a lot of slack, but I also don't want to miss an opportunity to say, you know, and Father so-and-so, what is your story? How did you come to this?
Well, the fact of the matter is it's often self-replicating.
Mm-hmm.
Most forms of violence are, especially when it's a form of violence against children, and child sexual abuse is certainly a form of violence. It's not a sex thing. It's a crime of violence. And we know. It's documented. Children who are subjected to violence often grow up to subject their children to violence, unless there's some mm-hmm. sort of determined effort to break that cycle. And so someone who has been subjected to sexual abuse will act out. I mean, there's a classic case here in West Virginia. It goes back to 2004, and son of a gun, it involves Don Blankenship. How about that? Back in 2004, the Supreme Court of West Virginia, and that's another story because that the Supreme Court of West Virginia is it's a disaster. We've got a judicial disaster on our hands in this state, and that's another story. But they had taken a case on appeal, and it was the case of, oh God, what was his name? I'm looking now. Wow, it doesn't even show up anymore. But the Supreme Court had taken the case of a young man who had been convicted of child sexual abuse. And the Supreme Court, in an act of mercy, admitted him to a form of probation, and then he re-abused. And Don Blankenship used that as a lever to achieve an electoral victory to get rid of one hated Supreme Court justice named Warren McGraw, whom he suspected would vote against him in a multi-million-dollar suit against Don Blankenship and Massey Energy. It was an incredibly cynical exercise. But the centerpiece of it was this young man who had been viciously sexually abused and then had perpetrated himself and reoffended. And that kid, that young man, who was a convicted criminal, was pilloried throughout this state for the personal gain of Don Blankenship. I mean, that man's evil, okay? Make no mistake. But reoffending and passing the offense on through what is, what I, if the language hasn't changed, is often called acting out behavior, is no stranger to the literature.
Yeah, because the case that you're citing, I'm sure you've spoken of it on the air before. That's why it rings a bell. And yes, Don Blankenship is evil incarnate, as far as I can see. And I know that thing about don't be casting stones, you know, those who are also not without fault. But there's no comparison. I mean, in the Catholic Church, we had mortal sins and we had venial sins. You know, I think Blankenship and people of that sort who are that corrupt and dark. There's some other category. There must be, even beyond mortal, in terms of sin and infraction. There has to be. I don't know. I bummed myself out, Bob. I did.
Well, I'm terribly sorry.
I didn't mean to do this, but I hope it does serve some sort of better purpose. For people with Netflix, watch the film Spotlight. Read Richard Sipes' obituary. Look into it, because, you know, we're walking around, all of us, impacted and warped by something. Just, it's part of the nature of life. You know, trying to keep body and soul and mind together and be helpful to one another and to our country and to our government. And, I mean, we're all walking wounded. And to the extent that we're aware of our current status as human beings on the planet, you know, it's good to check, you know, in the mall, there's a big lighted sign near all the entrances.
You are here.
Yeah, each of us, as often as possible, should do a cosmic "you are here" check. It doesn't have any power to change anything. It just gives you a moment of orientation, first of all, in terms of where you are versus where you would like to end up. And it gives you a little breather, you know, an opportunity to catch your breath for a moment and take stock of where you currently are and focus more laser-like on where you'd like to be. And I say that in terms of the midterms, because I will not stop beating that drum. I can't. None of us can. None of us can. Trump is only a symptom, in many ways, of our state of things in this country and in this world. I mean, the people who head up the controlling party of the House and the Senate, in some ways, are a symptom of the disease. And we have an opportunity in not too many weeks to begin to affect, well, I was going to say change, but first you have to affect your presence into the conversation and into the dynamic. Because if you've done that step one correctly, then you can be about doing step two, which is figuring out what needs to be done and subsequent steps beyond that, actually implementing the things that so desperately need to be done. Because we cannot go on the way we have. That's not an option. And like that old campaign tagline, vote on November, whatever it is, the stakes are too high for you to stay home. Vote and engage as if your very lives and futures hinged upon what you do or don't do. I know that sounds dramatic, but that's where we are. And to say that we're not, use another 60s things, if you're not part of the solution,
you're part of the problem.
So there you go. That's my epistle for today, Bob.
We clown around and carry on and have our fun, Scott, but sometimes we have to get serious, and that's okay. And
well,
I don't know any way to talk about this story and make it funny, so don't feel bad.
No, you can't. You can't. And it was a 1-2 punch in my case, because I had looked on that website after watching Spotlight the other day, And, you know, it was a 1-2-3. It was the movie, it was the website, it was the connection to names on the website, and then this story that popped today. It's like, isn't there enough madness? Did I really need to engage
no,
in
and,
that?
And you know? It's not the same thing, but to a certain extent, I sympathize and identify with what you're talking about, because I will not forget that time a few years back when I saw a news story about a physician, because apparently that's a problem too. See Ohio State, see Michigan State, and see my former personal physician. Reading the news story, I've told this story before. He was trying to rape an incapacitated elderly man in the hospital, and the only way the man could fight back was to bite off the physician's tongue.
Oh, Lord.
And this was the guy who, and look, I mean, I'm not trying to make a connection, but you can't help but inside your head, you know, this was the guy who gave me the first prostate exam of my life.
Oh, God. Now, there's an orbit I don't even want to contemplate.
No, because that ain't nothing. That ain't nothing but broken hunks of asteroid.
Ay, ay, ay.
I first read the story and went, whoop! And you know, my poor old DJ brain immediately queued up Boy George singing, "I know all there is to know about the crying game." And oh, he sang. God damn it! Well, we'll never get that other $20 now. But I mean, I made you smile. I made you smile.
Well, you did. And your singing tends to do that to me. But it was also the context and the tune and all of that. But yes, again, orbits and intersections.
Well, intersectionality is a thing.
Yeah.
In the scholastic world, Larry out in Berkeley introduced me to it, and I went out and studied on it some, and it's for real. But Scott, I'm glad you brought it to the table. Like I said, I would have gone into it tomorrow evening, but there's no way it would have had the relevance that you have brought to it.
Well, I mean, let it serve as a preamble, because just because we stop talking about it when we hang up here, that, I mean, the conversation has to go on until we start seeing things turn around in some positive, meaningful, change-filled way. I mean, that's what's so frustrating about what we do in terms of our conversation and our attitudes and our politics. The most frustrating thing is the fact it's a process, and they'll be dumping dirt on us years from now before we're done, and there'll still be stuff yet to do. And on one hand, that's daunting, but on the other hand, that's really exciting when you think about it. You know, it's that old, what is that thing? That you want to see, what is that, how that goes?
Be the change you want to see in the world. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that really, that's all we can do. That's really all we can do, and be focused and ongoing with it, because it's like a mission that never ends. It's a process. But anyway, let me go and get some of my cheap coffee.
And turn the fan back on. Absolutely. It's got to be getting a little roasty-toasty.
Yeah, and contemplate, if not my navel, my new phone bill that I didn't anticipate having.
So you only went for the 7. You didn't go for the 8.
Yeah, because it was the option with the monthly payment that would keep my monthly wireless bill fairly close to where it had been. And I don't know. The eight, I'd read something about the eight that didn't strike me, and the 10 was way out of my price range, even on monthly payments. You know, and when this one goes in 2.5 years or whatever it is, you know, maybe I will, you know, move up a couple of notches. I went from the three to the 4S to the 6, which was a big jump, the most recent phone. And the 7 just kind of fit my budget. So, oh, well.
Understandable.
All right, man. I enjoy these. Enjoy is not the right word. I value these forays into what's going on and what has gone on and how it all fits. I don't think that stuff can be done too much. And I wish all the fun lovers and truth seekers nothing but happiness in today's world, because God knows we could all use a nice big chunk of it with whipped cream on top.
That, or you know, that, or at the very least a margarita. Absolutely.
There you go.
All right, Scott, you have yourself a good evening, my friend. I appreciate it. You take care.
Okay, Bob, you too, and give my best to all the folks on the home front there in West Virginia, because I too read about your Supreme Court and your legislature, and those fuckers have lost their minds.
Well, the legislature. You know, the funny thing, we're not going to do that. We are not. You're going to go and make coffee. I'll talk to you later, Scott.
Yeah.
Take care.
Okay, but what I'm saying is we'll hear about that, because I'm sure there's more to be said.
Oh, there is. It just needs a couple of hours, that's all.
All right, man.
Later.
Take care.
Bye now.
Yeah.
Our buddy Scott calling from San Diego. And again, I think that was a needed conversation. I never would have dreamed that, well, it's another example of what happens here all the freaking time. You've got a story, it sort of exists out in the vacuum of the news world, and then lo and behold, it gets brought home in intensely personal form by a member of this community. It never ceases to amaze me. It's 22 minutes past the hour on this Titanic Tuesday, the 14th of August, 2018. And as I joked a couple of minutes ago when I sang, we got $20 to go to meet Larry in Liberalville's challenge. 50 from yesterday, 50 today. And that will go a long way to, well, it would go, $610 was the fundraising goal. And we've raised 80 of the $100 worth of challenge. So if we can raise the other $20, and God knows I hate talking about this, and you know I hate talking about this, but there's nothing to do but talk about it. Well, if we can do that, then we can say that we've knocked down $200 of it, and then we'll just be at $610 again tomorrow with another $50 challenge on the table. So we can, let's see if we can raise that $20. Four at five, or two at ten, or one at 20, or something. But let's just at least knock down the challenge, because these are extreme acts of kindness by members of the community to offer to double people's money in a situation in which this network exists, and in which there are a lot more listeners than there are people contributing to the program to keep the program available for all the people who don't. And that's not being shitty. It's just the way it works. And so, you know, that's where we are. Meanwhile, let's run up to Wisconsin for a couple of minutes. Is that you, Flavio?
Yeah, that's me. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Did you go vote today? Of course you did.
Well, you know, I can't.
Oh, that's right. You can't. I'm sorry.
I'm not I'm just a resident.
I mean, yeah, I know. It's just a pity you couldn't put on, like, a big nose and glasses and go and help out Kathleen Vineout or Mike McCabe or somebody. I understand.
Oh, no, but I've been encouraging people to go and do it for, you know, for me, you know. It's, you know.
Sorry.
You were talking about the Danes. You were talking about the Danes earlier.
Yeah.
You know, they fought the Nazis. Their country was occupied. They protected the Jews of Denmark. They saved the Jews of Denmark.
So how ironic is it that, lo and behold, a Trump supporter would attack the people who fought the Nazis?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting how that works out, isn't it?
Yeah, and I was thinking, you know, how the poverty over at Fox News, you know, that the viewers, the Fox News viewers, that's where they get their information from, you know, and it's really sad. I mean, it's pathetic. If you know your history, you know that the Danes were some of the biggest fighters against the Nazis. I mean, their resistance was incredible, and they dealt with the traitors after the war too. You know, I remember seeing pictures of women's heads shaved and all that, and collaborators, you know. And they, 30 years ago, when I was an exchange student in France, I befriended a Dane. His name was Peter. He was studying philosophy at the University of Nantes, and we'd spend hours talking and discussing, you know, until the wee hours of the morning after bottles and bottles of wine. And I understand why they're called the Latins of Europe. They're not stoic like the Norwegians or the Swedes, but extroverted, gregarious. They're some of the happiest people in Europe, you know?
I didn't know that they were known as the Latins of Europe.
Yep. Of Scandinavia, I should say.
Okay.
Latins of Scandinavia, because unlike the Swedes or the Norwegians or even the Finns, you know, they're very extroverted, very gregarious, he spoke fluent English, of course, as all Danes do. And so I befriended him when I was over there, and it was a new experience for me, because I'd always thought of Scandinavians as cold and aloof, you know. And he was nothing like that. But he'd be amused at Trish Regan, I'm sure.
Well,
hello?
I mean, amused is apparently the response that she got in Denmark. You can waste the time it takes to get irritated at an idiot like that. Or you can say, you know, I can almost imagine her in Denmark. Quiet, you know, is anybody looking? Because I'm loving this place. I don't want to see anybody. I don't want anybody to see me loving this place.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did you ever, I mean, you've been quite the world traveler, Flavio. Have you ever been there?
I've been to Copenhagen.
And is it like a grim, gray, overcast place with people just plodding along, staring at the concrete? And
oh, hell no. Did you ever hear about Christiania?
Hear what about Christiania?
The hippie city?
No.
Yeah, it's like a commune kind of thing, and you should visit that sometime.
I have heard of that. Yes. Took me a minute, but yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, you know, it's squatters and, you know, just hippies, artists. I had a lot of fun. I mean, just, you know, and back then, that was 30 years ago. It was before the EU, you know, before the Euro.
Yeah.
They were still some of the happiest people in Europe.
Yeah,
you know?
when did they go from being Dürer and maybe that's just the bad reputation that Shakespeare gave them.
Yeah, that's a bad reputation. Shakespeare gave him. They're,
but, I mean, there was conflict between Denmark and Norway. And,
mm-hmm.
And the Swedes were once upon a time some mean sons of bitches.
Mm-hmm. But, the Danes liked to set themselves apart from the Norwegians and the Swedes. And I think it might have something to do with demographics. You know, we were talking about, you know, Laura Ingraham and demographics. Well, it happens that they're a pretty compact little country, I mean, it's population-wise. And so...
Well, they're just kind of stuck there on that little peninsula and...
Yeah, Jutland.
I thought it was. I wasn't going to say it, though, for fear of getting emails saying, no, you dumbass, it's not Jutland.
Yeah, it just juts out. And
yeah, it kind of makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe it's, you know, maybe it's fun with language. Maybe it's all cognate. It's the land that juts.
Yeah, it just juts out there, you know. Jutland. And, I just think it's funny, you know, talking about demographics and all, and they are very densely populated. And that's probably why they're, you know, they're gregarious and.
But they've learned. But they've learned to get along in a densely populated situation.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of Japanese.
It was a couple of years back that the number one restaurant on Earth was a restaurant in Copenhagen or somewhere in the surrounding environs. And they became famous because the chef would go out and walk the rocky beaches, finding interesting stuff to eat, and bring it back and put it on the menu.
Wow, I did not know that. But that's who you reminded me of when you were talking about Denmark. You reminded me of Peter. And to this day, I remember, you know, yeah, no, the Danes are very different from the Swedes or the Norwegians.
Well, and the other part of it is that, you know, you get, because she opened up her piece saying there's something rotten in Denmark. These people have a 56% top tax rate, and it disincentivizes people from working. And you know, stupid, 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 idiot, idiot, idiot.
Mm-hmm. I like the way they handled it, though.
Oh, well, yes, in what appears to be typical and classic Danish form. What the hell was that barb about? I guess you'll be bummed out because there aren't any cupcake bakeries or cupcake nightclubs. Or
Do you know? I don't. Did she say something about that before? Or?
Well, I don't know. I looked for it, but I couldn't make any sense of it.
I think
she must have said something about cupcakes.
No, I think what they probably mean is that they have such wonderful pastries that, you know,
cupcakes are kind of lowbrow.
She probably complained about there not being enough McDonald's or something, you know. Maybe that's what they meant. You know how Americans abroad always head for McDonald's.
Right.
And
there's a great quote in the graphic that Lars Gert Loza sent along. You're more likely to achieve the American dream if you live in Denmark. although lack of cupcake cafes probably will be disappointing.
Yeah, I think that's what they meant by it, but.
She must have said something about an absence of cupcakes. I'm digging now.
Mm-hmm.
To see if I can. Oh, dadgummit. Okay, hold on. Now you've made me all curious, and I want to know about the cupcakes.
I think that that's just kind of like a generic jab.
I don't want to believe that. Because I don't think somebody like Lars Loza would just do that.
Mm.
So, sadly, there's not a clip, and if there was, I couldn't play it because it would be all covered up in reverb. But
or advertisements or something else. Or... No, I'll have to dig that up. I mean, that eluded me as well.
Jensen, one of the ones responding in the Bloomberg News, in the Bloomberg report, said, "It's simply an her report was simply an expression of how politicized and completely decoupled from facts some American news media have become."
Yeah.
Ooh, that stings.
Decoupled.
Yeah.
Oh, the Danes, among the Scandinavians, the Danes speak the best English, too, by the way.
Oh, do they really?
Yeah.
In work-life balance, Denmark ranks second highest in the OECD, just after the Netherlands, while the U.S. ranks ninth from the bottom.
Uh-huh.
And, Herr, would he be, is he Herr? I don't know. What's the form of address in Danish? Anyway, he said, Mr. Jensen said, yeah, there's a high tax burden, but the citizens get a lot back from the public coffers.
Mm-hmm.
I bet, you know what? I'll bet in Denmark, if you're sick, you can go to the doctor and not have
and
to go bankrupt and never see a bill.
Never see a bill.
Son of a gun.
Never see a bill. You can go to the university, they pay you.
But to give you an idea
they
of
pay
how...
You, they pay you to go to school.
Jesus.
You get a stipend.
But to give you an idea of how sleazy the initial report was, Flavio.
I don't watch Fox News. So.
No, but, well, that's why I'm sitting here telling you. She was comparing Denmark's government and economy to that of Venezuela.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. But I can't find anything here about the cupcakes.
No.
Maybe that was just a Danish dig. Maybe it's a transliteration thing, that she might go to Denmark expecting to eat Danish in the morning and there aren't any.
Exactly.
Maybe that's what he meant by cupcakes.
Exactly. No, because the Danes have some of the best pastries in the world.
Yeah, but
really.
do they call them Danish?
No, no.
Of course not. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the Human Development Index, I mean, just everything. Denmark is up there, and they, I guess they had a survey not too long ago of the happiest people on Earth.
Happiest people on Earth, absolutely. And you have to admit, Flavio, that sitting down at breakfast to a lovely, sweet, warm cheese Norwegian is not what you want. So there's a reason it's a Danish.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to sit. You don't want to sit down to a raspberry Swede.
No. No, but I was thinking. Just think about that. Not only is tuition at Danish universities free, okay?
Yeah.
But they pay you to go to school. They give you an allowance.
They are investing in their future. See, that sounds like crazy talk in the United States, but in civilization, it sounds pretty good.
Wow! Not only is my university tuition free, but I get an allowance.
Well, that's what covers the bottles of wine and the long conversations deep into the night over questions of philosophy.
Exactly.
I mean, you're the one that brought those up.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
How's their beer? I mean, it ain't Belgium, but and it's not Germany.
No.
But
it's kind of on the light side.
Not fishy or anything.
No, no, no. But you know, I prefer Well, you know, well, the same thing in France. You know, France, the beer wasn't that great, but you don't go to France for the beer. You go for the wine. And Denmark, you go for the akvavit.
Well, damn the luck. I guess I'd, yeah. Right.
You got that right.
Yeah, right.
You don't go for the beer. You go directly for the akvavit.
Yeah, do not. Yeah, quit screwing around.
Because the beer is kind of like what? Like Minnesota beer? It's like 3% or something?
Oh, that's not. Isn't that what they call near beer?
Near beer. It's kind
of... Wait, Minnesota? All Minnesota beer is 3%?
No, that used to be, but.
What a nightmare.
Yeah.
See, we've started something, Flavio. Scott has apparently we've raised Scott's spirits from the previous conversation. Eat Danish in the morning. Now wait, Bob, says Scott. Do you mean that in a Soylent Green kind of way? No, I do not. And he says, P.S. Victor Borge was a Dane and a great one at that.
No, he's great, Swedish.
Wait, Great Dane? Sorry.
I thought he was Swedish.
I don't know. Besides being internationally known for his humor at the piano, do you know the field in which he made quite a tidy fortune? I do not. As to that 56% top tax rate, Flavio, Robert in Australia says, so the Danes have a 56% top tax rate. I bet they have great schools, great health care, 6 weeks off a year, government-guaranteed pensions, and on, you know, a good life for everyone.
Yeah.
Or as the Australian
capitalist country too.
Yeah, or as the Australians used it didn't wasn't there something in Australia once upon a time, Robert, called a fair go? Or a fair something? I don't know. But that's what the guy meant. Did they get money back? James in Illinois, by the way, says, "Can I have a Danish?" James says, "You could start with a bouquet of flowers." Yeah.
Well, what you get back, you know, what do you get back for your taxes here? You know,
we get. I mean, around here we get blasting dust. I don't know how long it's going to take, but right now driving to Charleston for me is a pain in the ass because I have to cross the river and go down a much worse road because US 60 has been blocked because the mountain came down into it because they've been blasting the bejesus out of that mountain for, about 46 years or so. We don't get much for our tax dollars in West Virginia.
It seems like it pretty much goes into politicians' pockets, you know.
Well, sure it does, or it goes to subsidize pipelines and fracking operations and the coal industry. Because, well, that's who owns the government.
I'd much rather live under a society as transparent as... Speaking of transparency, did you know that they publish everybody's salaries?
In Denmark?
Yeah. Well, you know what everybody makes.
And so far they're not rioting in the streets?
No. No, and here, you know, you're not supposed to talk about how much you make, you know, because...
Yeah, because...
And that's how they keep people divided. That's how they keep people divided here.
By the way, we have an alternative viewpoint coming in on Danish beer, Flavio.
Okay.
Brother Deacon Asa says...
This was 30 years ago, okay? It might have changed.
No, well, Brother Deacon Asa says, Carlsberg is snake piss.
It is.
Yeah, Carlsberg is snake piss, but... Yeah. And by the way, Alexander says Danish pastries, it's all good. That's the worst thing that could be said about Swedish, Danish brothers and sisters. Sounds like they're more evolved and progressive over there than we are in the U.S., which is not at all surprising to me personally. That last was in all caps, and I just didn't scream it. But yeah, and I remember famously in that first debate back in late 2015 or whenever it was when Bernie brought up Norwegian education and medicine and access to health care, and Hillary famously declared, We are not Norway.
No shit.
We are so not Norway, and we're damn sure not Denmark. And
no. We're actually closer to a Latin American country right now.
Well, one that grows bananas, perhaps. Banana Republic.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, to keep working the Shakespeare and the Hamlet angle, you know, alas, poor Hillary, I knew her well.
Talking about beer, just going back to the beer thing, my favorite beers are the Dutch and the Belgian ones.
Oh well, Belgium is beer Disneyland.
Yeah, there's this beer that I adore. It's from the Holland. It's called Guldendrak. That beer is amazing. Golden Dragon.
Oh, is that Dutch or is, no? I've had Guldendrak and I thought that was Belgian, not Dutch.
It's an ale, and you're right. It's from Belgium.
Yeah, yeah.
From the Flemish part of Belgium.
Oh, can I tell you my Belgium story.
Go ahead.
Okay, so I was on the way back from Charleston a couple of weeks back, and I'd popped
Hello?
In. Yeah, I'm right here.
Okay.
I had popped into the little Kroger's down at the foot of the mountain, and I've been eating the occasional. They make these little mini cups of Häagen-Dazs, and it's just enough to keep my blood sugar from being skyrocketed the next morning, but it satisfies the sweet tooth. You know? And it's you know, it's milk, cream, eggs, and vanilla. Okay,
yeah.
It's the Rennheitsgebot of ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went through, and they said, "Did you ever find everything okay?" And I said, "Well, no, I didn't find my Häagen-Dazs, but I got my half and half for the coffee in the morning, so we're good." And she said, "Häagen-Dazs, we don't hardly ever have that." And I said, "Well, more's the pity, because it's excellent." And she said, "Häagen-Dazs, isn't that that's an imported ice cream?" "No, ma'am, no, ma'am." "Well, that's a foreign language name." And I said, "No, ma'am, it's an entirely made-up word. Häagen-Dazs isn't any language." She goes, "No, no, no, I know. It's Belgian." I said,
No, ma'am.
It was invented in the United States. It was developed in the United States. They just wanted something that would sound foreign to get the rubes to buy it." "No,
exactly."
"No." And she said, no, I know. I read it. It's that Häagen-Dazs is a Belgian word."
It's kind of like selling a beer, call it cool with a K and an umlaut over the U.
I think they sell pants that way. In fact, I know they sell pants that way. I've got a pair of cool pants, KUHL. You think I'm kidding? I'm not. I wasn't going to argue with her. You know, she was absolutely convicted in her knowledge. Not just that Häagen-Dazs was Belgian, but that there is a language called Belgian.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, not Flemish.
Or French.
Belgian.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it reminds me of a time many, many years ago. We were in Mario's, a place in Pittsburgh that serves beer in yard glasses. You ever seen the yards, Flavia? They're a yard tall. They're like big beakers. You have to drink them a special way or you'll wind up with a face full of beer.
There was a German restaurant in Madison where they serve beer in a boot, but...
Well, this is even more fun, the yard glasses. Comes with a little wooden stand, and had to put down a $50 deposit to buy a beer because the glasses were expensive, but it was fun. And so we're sitting there, and it was me and a couple of my law school buddies, and this one guy was I loved him to death. He was a dear friend, but he was a hopeless know-it-all. And he'd spent some time in Europe and everything, and so that, you know, elevated status and whatever. And for some reason or other, René Descartes came into the conversation. And I didn't introduce him. My buddy did and pronounced his name Descartes.
Oh.
And it went through me like a dose of salt. And I said, "You mean Descartes? Rene Descartes?" And he said, "Well," because he was backed into a corner because he was, he was a culture snob. And he said, "Well, Descartes, that's the Swiss pronunciation."
Oh, okay.
Swiss. Another language.
Swiss.
Like Belgian.
Yeah. That's funny. You know there, you know how many languages are spoken in Switzerland, don't you?
Oh, what? German, French, Italian?
Italian, Rätoromansch.
That one I haven't even heard of.
Yep, in the mountains. It's a variety of Provençal.
Oh, nice.
Kind of like, looks like Provençal or Catalan. It's rapidly dwindling, though.
Well, I knew about the Italian, the German, and the French.
In the
English.
How's that?
English, you know. But it, no, you just file that away. File that away in case you ever want to impress your friends with your acumen. You can tell them about Rene Descartes, and that's the Swiss pronunciation.
Oh, the Descartes.
Yes,
okay.
That's my gift to the Horn Family Community Congregation this evening.
Jeez.
And then you can tell them about the Belgian Haagen-Dazs that you ate.
Oh, that too. Yeah, that is funny as all get up.
Somewhere along the way, I'm sure you'll maybe offer your friend a Danish, or a Swede.
Oh boy.
Or a Norwegian. nice warm cheese Norwegian. maybe a cheese Norwegian made with that Norwegian Jetost cheese. Smells kind of skanky, tastes like caramel. Good stuff. I love culture, Flavio. I do.
Oh, me too. I mean,
but you know, whenever we talk, you always make me think. Yeah, I want to. How do you pronounce that? How do you pronounce that Brazilian? God damn it! I'm hopeless. How do you pronounce that Brazilian cocktail?
Caipirinha.
Caipirinha. Caipirinha. Am I close?
Caipirinha.
Okay.
Yeah. You know it's called caipirinha, okay? Caipira means country bumpkin. So caipirinha is the diminutive little country bumpkin. So basically
does that mean it's like the Brazilian hillbilly drink?
Yeah. Caipirinha.
Well, damn it, I want one.
Yeah, it's kind of like, mint juleps in Kentucky, you know.
Or a mojito.
A mojito. It's the same idea, you know, except they use the sugarcane rum.
Yeah, the cachaca is a lot
cachaca.
Cachaca is a lot more raw, isn't it?
No, they have some very fine ones.
Okay.
You know, aged in oak casks. And, you know, they have, you know, gold, silver, you know, you don't want to get the rot gut. They have some really fine ones.
I fear that's why there was like one brand of it in a liquor store once and I bought it and I have a feeling I got the rot gut. Because it's the kind of stuff you do a shot of it and then you'd get that whole full body shiver.
Ooh, brr.
Yeah, one of those.
Yeah, no.
I'd like to have healthy innards. I'd like to sit down and drink with you sometime, Flavio. I think it would be a grand time.
And Ipioca. And, basically all it is ice, crushed ice, right? The sugarcane rum. And sprinkled with sugar. And a lime, you know.
Aren't there any mint leaves involved?
No. Just... No, that... But, you know, you want to get the good stuff, though. I mean, you know, the bad stuff will remove paint, you know, and it's not good.
Yeah, I'm a lowbrow, Flavio. Leave it to me.
Yeah, and no, but I've seen in Woodman's a brand that's good. it's not rot gut. I mean, it's generally strong, you know, but not more than 80 proof, you know.
Yeah. Well, but, you know, you're up in Wisconsin, so you can go out and you can have a spotted cow anytime you want to, so.
Oh, yeah, and Uftabach. I actually prefer Uftabach from the New Glarus. I'm more into Bach, but the spotted cow is okay, but I think the Uftabach is my favorite.
You know, you need to learn to do an Arnold Schwarzenegger impression so you can say, I'll be Bach.
I'll be Bach.
You're bringing
You've had Uftabach. You've had Uftabach.
No, I have not tried that. I have not tried the Uftabach.
Ufta. Yeah, it's New Glarus Uftabach.
Oh, that sounds so good.
And they also have, if I'm not mistaken, they have a coffee stout.
Ooh.
Which is just delicious.
See, there's a brewery somewhere down in western North Carolina many, many years ago. I tried, they had a coffee porter that tasted like a Hershey bar, a beer with, like, it, not sweet, but it just had over, it was a coffee porter, but it had overtones of chocolate in it, and oh my God.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's come a long way. I mean, the U.S. has come a long way. Some people saying now that they make better beer here than they do in Germany. I know, it's sacrilege, but yeah, back in the day, you know, it was all Budweiser and Miller, and now we got all these microbrews, and, you know, I didn't have that growing up.
No.
Right?
No, well, when we were running up to the Tennessee state line, it was to buy plastic gallon jugs full of Carling Black Label.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Asa used the term snake piss. Now, that's some snake piss.
Yeah, that's
bad stuff. Well, Flavio, it's time to wrap it up. But I've enjoyed the conversation immensely, and thank you for defending the honor of Denmark.
Yeah, no, I just I did it on behalf of my good buddy Peter from Copenhagen.
Well, that's the beauty of world travel. I forget what the exact quote was that Mark Twain used. He said, "There's nothing for opening the mind and eliminating prejudices like world travel." And of course, the number of people in the United States who have a passport is shockingly low.
Very shocking.
Yeah. All right, Flavio, have yourself a wonderful evening, and I hope the election comes out the way you wanted, even if...
No more 4 years of this cretin, please.
Oh, I know, and I know Ralphs is right there with you. Remember, Ralphs is the author of the Trash Fitz Walker Stand Challenge. So, yes.
Yeah, no more.
Jesus, no more. That, no. You know what? That may be the capstone of the program this evening. Jesus, no more. Flavio, have a good evening, my friend.
You too.
Bye now. My buddy Flavio calling from far Wisconsin. Nice note coming in from Dave. Dave in Indiana Stan said, "Dear Bob, thank you for bringing the story about sexual abuse high priests in Pennsylvania for tonight. I needed to hear it. As a survivor, it helped, and thanks, Scott, for the website. I'll look it up and see what I can find. It's been a healing night." Signed, your buddy Dave in Indiana Stan. Well, the credit belongs to Scott for bringing the topic to the table, because, like I said, I would have left it until tomorrow evening for prayer meeting. But I think it was more than appropriate to have the conversation. And thank you for your kind words. And, well, if this program helps folks along the way, then this program is further validated in its intent. Thank you, Dave. Thank you very much. And thanks very kindly to Alma. And thanks very kindly to Barry. Thank you both very much indeed. We not only met Larry in Liberalville's challenge, we went $20 beyond it. So that means that we took it down from $6.10 to $3.90. And so that means tomorrow evening it's not going to be nearly as harrowing as it otherwise would have. And Robert in Australia with a wrap up. A fair go, yeah. The expression is still in use in Australia, but the concept is long gone. Which is odd, as it's in the national anthem, Advance Australia Fair. One of the most boring, dull, and sleep-inducing pieces of drivel ever. Our pollies tend to copy whatever dumb idea comes out of the USA. Tax cuts, yada, yada, yada. Which has left the average Australian worse off than their parents' generation. The great Australian dream of owning your own home is long gone for most people. You pretty much need to have incomes to do it, and even then it's a struggle. So a fair go is long gone. A fair go is fairly gone in Australia because their Liberal Party is the same as our Republican Party, neither of whom want people to have anything vaguely resembling that. And so we come to the end of the program. I thank you all for joining in for this Titanic Tuesday. There will be much more madness tomorrow for prayer meeting Wednesday. Glory. And we'll see. We'll just see what comes our way. I've already got examples lined up of Christian love that will just probably make your eyes cross. Thank you to those of you who jumped in to meet Larry in Liberalville's challenge. Thank you to all of you who keep the program going. Thanks to our subscribers both at PayPal and Patreon. Thank you very kindly to the folks who kick in over at Venmo. Thank you very much indeed to all of you who share your precious finite time engaged in this little conversation. I never cease to be amazed at the connections this little community makes. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you for your moderation this evening, Sparky. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Hopefully tomorrow the reverb will be gone. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.